I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. I am Chris Ann Hall, and you can find us at chrisannhall.com, K-R-I-S-A-N-N-E-H-A-L-L.com, where we are always liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. I have with me my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall, and we are so happy to have you here with the Chris Ann Hall Show, where we are truth, fact, not fake. We are principle, not party ideology or politics. I believe we have got a fantastic show for you today. This is the big show. This is the Saturday show where you get 2 hours of chrisannhall.com, Chris Ann Hall Show. And we are going to bring to you today an important message about freedom of speech, about the rights of our students to speak on public campuses, whether they be college or high school or wherever. We also, in the second half of our show, we're going to talk about Manafort. We're going to talk about Cohen. We're going to talk about Trump. We're going to talk about the things that the media is not talking about. We're going to talk about the things that the talking heads are not talking about. We're going to talk about the things that ought to concern you most about this entire process of the Mueller investigation, the Cohen plea deal, the Manafort conviction. If you want to know what's constitutionally relevant, then you need to stay for the second half of the Chris Ann Hall Show today. First, we're going to talk about this issue of freedom of speech. I want to remind everybody, you know, I wrote that article about the Boston Globe and their editorial crew writing an opinion piece about how hashtag free press is in danger. And in the article that I have on the Boston Globe and hashtag free press, Boston Globe claims that Donald Trump has called journalists the enemy. And you know, this all was sparked because of the Trump rally where people were shouting at Acosta and saying that CNN,
booing
him, CNN, fake news, get out of here, that sort of thing. And so then they wrote this article about how Trump is making journalism the enemy. But that's not the truth. So in the article, I point out it's not free press that is the enemy. It is journalists who weaponize press as a means of political agenda, political ideology, instead of fact and news, that are really the enemy. And it's got some amazing quotes from Thomas Jefferson in it as well.
Yeah.
So
of him saying similar things.
Yeah, of him calling out fake news in 1807 and in 1812. It's just absolutely crazy that Solomon was right. There is absolutely nothing new under the sun. But while we're talking about free press, free speech, I think that we need to really talk about where this is under attack. And now it's been under attack for quite some time on our campuses. And what we see on our campuses, college campuses, specifically public school, right? public college campuses are these lopsided policies for student free speech, even creating these stupid and completely unconstitutional free speech zones.
Yeah, well, it's only on the public campus. That's the only place we can have this discussion is about public campuses, government-funded campuses, or well, I guess private as well if they receive government funds, because then they're not really private.
Right.
But
that's a distinction, though, because people are like, I go to a private school. It's not private if they're getting federal funding.
Right. Yeah, I was looking at FIRE's database of disinvitation, where they list these speakers that have been disinvited to speak, and FIRE, what is it, FIRE.org.
Foundation for Individual Rights and Education.
FIRE.org, the FIRE.
They've been fighting for a long time for free speech on campuses.
Yeah, but they also include private schools in this list. It's a lot of private, particularly Catholic universities. So I don't know. I'm not sure what they're trying to say here. Do they not understand the freedom of speech? Right. Because you don't have freedom of speech in my living room.
Right.
This is a private residence. Mm-hmm. Freedom of speech talks about the government censoring speech. All right. So on a private campus, the whole idea of a private school for some people, particularly some parents, is I send my child to this school because I have certain expectations of what will be taught and what will not be taught. And that's the prerogative of the school as a private entity. The problem is these public universities that our tax dollars fund that then choose, you know, what side needs to be heard and what side needs to be silenced.
Do we know that these Catholic schools are not getting federal funding, like Pell Grants student loans?
I don't know that, but the problem that I have with the FIRE database is they don't make that distinction.
Yeah.
How are you defining that? Because if I see private school disinvited so-and-so, I'm thinking, so what? They have a right to do that. So it would be nice for FIRE to explain, you know, what's going on there in that database. Are you saying that private schools don't have this right? If so, you don't understand what you're talking about.
Right.
If you're saying that they receive government funds, therefore they can't do this, then you're right.
Yeah, and I think that would be a great educational point of distinction to be making, because in this day of confusion, there's a great deal of confusion in America about free speech. You know,
yeah,
we always people say Facebook is violating my freedom of speech.
Yeah, you don't have a right to free speech on Facebook.
You don't have a right to free speech in Hobby Lobby.
No.
You don't have a right because they're a private organization. Now, there are many that could make a legitimate claim on Facebook and Twitter because of the government funding that went to build those. But we don't know.
Yeah, then you're getting in the weeds.
Right. Then we're getting in.
But on the face of it, it's not a government entity.
It's not.
It doesn't claim to be. It doesn't.
It's not even
pass itself off as some agent of the government.
It's not even a public private corporation. Yeah. So.
Right. Now, whether it's an arm of the CIA in reality, you know, that's not publicly accepted or whatever. So I don't know one way or another, but the point is, you know, when they say you can't disinvite people from this Catholic university, that's not true on the face of it.
Right. Because if I'm in a Catholic university, I'm not going to, if I'm the dean of a Catholic university, I'm not going to let someone come in and teach on the tenets of Satanism.
Yeah, but then that goes back to what you've taught on numerous occasions in your religious liberty class, which people, in fact, the Christian right get livid with you about.
Right.
If these universities want to maintain their autonomy, they can't be taking these government funds.
That's right.
So that's one of the problems. So this goes into vouchers and these private schools taking these scholarships and all sorts of things. You know, you want to have your cake and eat it too. Yeah, okay, if you want to receive these government funds, knock yourself out. But you need to understand you're relinquishing your autonomy and you lose certain rights.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, you know what? If you have questions about that, remember libertyfirstuniversity.com. We have the religious liberty course online that will teach you the fundamental principles of religious liberty, the actual truthful definition of separation of church and state, which, by the way, separation of church and state, just to give you a little teaser into this course, is not a requirement on the government. Separation of church and state is a requirement on the church to keep the government out.
Right.
It's an obligation for
that the government has no business in the church.
The government has no business and it's in the church. And the interesting thing is, historically speaking, the government hasn't taken over the church by force. Well, the government has been invited into the church or has allowed the church to control the leadership so that they can take control of the message.
Yeah, but I've noticed a mistake in this conversation. We hear people react to this, and they respond with, there's no such thing as separation of church and state. They're making a mistake when they make that argument.
Although
it's not that
it's
there's
not
no such thing or it's not in
the
Constitution. The problem is not to say it doesn't exist. The thing is to define it properly. There is a such thing as separation of church and state. It means that state has no business in the church.
Well, and it is in the Constitution.
It's
because
the First Amendment.
It's the principle of
religious liberty. Exactly.
Making no law establishing religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
Yeah.
That is separation of church and
state.
And
the historical context that informs those statements. So it bothers me when I hear well-intentioned people express themselves in that way. This is not in the Constitution. There's no such thing. That's not true. That's not correct.
Well, you know, I think that sort of galvanic reaction to the term separation of church and state originates in the misinformation about it, because we have been teaching for decades now that separation of church and state means that God has no business in public discussion and that you can be limited in your speech. But it's the failure to teach that separation of church and state, as you said, really means that government has no business in your religious practice, has no business in your church, has no business in your speech.
But see,
and so that's the reaction. It's not in the Constitution, because they're reacting to the error that is being taught.
That's the trap, right?
Yeah.
That's what we talk about, when the logic and argument thing that we talk about. That's the trap. That's the trick.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing they do is seize the language, right?
Right.
They redefine the term, and then they offer it to you. And so you're arguing against their definition of the term, and they draw you into a particular argument.
And, that's why we're always saying, take back the narrative.
Exactly.
Take back the narrative means seize back the language. And I want to encourage all our Liberty First University students and all of those of you who are considering Liberty First University, make sure that you are enrolled, because this month the Logic course goes online. Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. I almost said Daily Journal, because we do have the Daily Journal that goes Monday through Thursday to give you your daily dose of Constitution of news the way it ought to be heard.
This is the double dose.
This is the double dose, right? We have our daily dose. And if you are listening to us on your terrestrial station, which we have all over the country, I mean, we have Chicago, we have Salem, we have New Mexico, we have, Pennsylvania, coast to coast.
Yeah.
That name's already taken, Coast to Coast. But we are Liberty Coast to Coast.
So is The Big Show. You said you don't know this, but there's a show called The Big Show. So you can't say this is The Big Show.
Oh,
that's somebody else's show.
I didn't know that.
So this is the bigger show, right?
This is the biggest show.
Yeah, there you go.
We are the biggest Liberty show.
So you get 2 hours on Saturday instead of one.
Right. And so if you are only hearing this, or you're hearing this for the first time, you are a first-time Chris Ann Hall Show listener. Don't forget to go to chrisannhall.com. You can go to iTunes. You can go to Google Music Play. You can go to Spotify. You can go to FM.com. You can go to the Chris Ann Hall mobile app, and you will get the Daily Journal Monday through Thursday.
Yeah.
Tell them what they're missing if they're not getting it.
Well, I mean, come on. You're missing daily education. You know, teaching you, not to mention it's entertaining, it's informative, and it's instructive. You know what I mean? Just like we're talking about the argument, the way people just respond and react to the dictated narrative. And so we try to help you think about how you're supposed to, I guess, form your argument, let's say, how you're supposed to respond.
Not only that, think about this. The average person who is plugged into politics and news gets a daily dose of bad information.
Yeah.
And how do we even recognize that it's bad information if we are never exposed to the good information?
Yeah,
and that's what we try to bring you on the daily journal.
And here's the thing, and I try my best to do this as I'm able. You know, you have the knowledge, and you know I'm trying to at
You're
times
the sidecar guy.
Tell people I'm the guy in the sidecar.
Right.
I'm trying to tell people how to do things, how to say things. You know, because it's not just important what you do, it matters how you do it. I mean, think about just a silly example. Sharing this show. We
right.
say, share the podcast, share the show, okay? But just sharing the show, is not really all you need to do, right?
Right.
There's a way I would suggest you share the show. You don't just share it on Facebook and leave it out there. I personally think, if you have somebody you want to get hooked and plugged into the show, you need to share it individually, directly, mm-hmm. personally, and make that plea. Hey, check this out. Listen to this and then tell me about it. So you have to give some prompt. So with anything you do like that, any kind of information, any kind of, because I know people hand out tracts, right? Mm-hmm. I know tracts have some utility.
Okay, but people don't know what tracts are.
So when you hand out some information pamphlet, right?
Right.
You want to inform
okay, thank
somebody
you.
About stuff in the church, you know, they'll write little pamphlets that express the gospel and then just hand them out or leave them laying mm-hmm. somewhere. You know, I think you need a personal hook. You need to
right.
hook somebody in, and so something as simple as whatever the topic's about. Hey, you were wondering about this thing, man, you should listen to this. In the second segment, this lady gets into it and I'm telling you, there's your answer, whatever. You personalize it. Or you say, hey, check out the show. Come back and tell me what you think about this show. I think it's amazing. I listen to it every day. You got to listen to this.
You know, I would
give them some hook.
I would like to offer up a challenge to those of you who are listening right now. Maybe you don't listen to the Daily Journal. Maybe you're not a regular listener to the show. I want to challenge you. Monday through Thursday, the Daily Journal. Listen to 1 week. Just put it in your calendar. I mean, you can listen to it anytime that you want to. It's a podcast. And listen to 4 days in a row and see if you're not hooked.
Yeah.
I have such confidence in the power of the truth. Everybody says knowledge is power. Well, you've got to have the correct knowledge or you're going to have the wrong kind of power, right? So,
yeah. But here's the thing.
Because what is it? Reagan said.
But knowledge is not power unless it's activated.
That's right.
And that's the point. And that's the kind of thing. Like what I'm talking about is not just about the podcast, not mm-hmm. just, hey, we want you to listen to the show. I'm trying to say something that
Activate.
Applies to anything you're trying to share. You can't just throw it out there. We have all these Facebook warriors just sharing. You got to go farther than that. You got to put a hook to it. You got to touch people directly. Get in the battle. Never too late to change your life. So don't let them steal your life.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show, our Saturday biggest Liberty show, our double dose. And we've been talking with my husband and co-host J.C. Hall about getting engaged in the battle. And speaking about getting engaged in the battle. You can get engaged in the battle by helping us and supporting our sponsors and supporting our show. Can I mention to you that we have a sponsor? His name is Richard Kramer, and he does Richard Kramer Engraving. Now, he engraves firearms. He creates unique and original pieces of jewelry, and he has made this message for you. And Richard says this: here's how much I love the Liberty message of the Chris Ann Hall Show and Daily Journal. If any listener would like some of my work and order from me, just tell me you heard. I'm a supporter of the Chris Ann Hall Show. Give me the date of the show that you heard this on, and I will donate 25% of your order to the Chris Ann Hall Show and to Liberty First University. He says our framers and founders knew that voluntary charity was for a moral and virtuous people, and one of the only ways they could keep governments limited. He says, I promise I won't jack up the price because that would be immoral. So Richard Kramer does amazing work. He did amazing work for us. And he says, if you contact him at richardkramerengraving@gmail.com, R-I-C-H-A-R-D, and Kramer is spelled K-R-A-M-E-R, engraving@gmail.com, and place an order with him, 25% of your purchase will come back to help us keep Liberty First online.
That's awesome.
And that's awesome. He also gave us a phone number. You can call him at 620-921-5555. 620-921-5555.
That's good stuff.
And go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's great, man. We really appreciate Richard Kramer Engraving. I was looking at this Fox News article suggesting that the Janus decision could affect this free speech thing on campuses. I'm not sure if that's entirely accurate, but maybe it moves the needle in that direction.
Let's remind people. Janus v. American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees is the Supreme Court opinion, not ruling, remember, the Supreme Court opinion, which struck a blow to public employee unions by telling the unions government workers, now these are government unions,
right,
not private unions.
Public sector unions.
Public sector unions. They don't have to pay labor fees, fees to these labor groups if
right.
they're not members.
Because the dues, they were forcing them to pay. Like if you worked there,
mm-hmm.
you had to
pay union dues whether you
yeah.
wanted to be a union member or not.
Right, and then they basically that's how they would fund the Democrat Party.
And so what the Supreme Court said, wait a minute, you're a government entity. You can't force people to support a particular
political
ideology
yeah.
or political speech. And so what this is an article in Fox News written by Fred Lucas. And what Fred is supposing is that this could be applied to college campuses. Remember, college campuses that take federal funding
yeah.
because they are public
yeah, exactly.
education entities.
Or could influence these public universities to take a look at what they're doing,
right.
kind of anticipating what the court might say.
How that all ties together is this. Most universities make students pay as a part of their tuition these things called activity fees. Mm-hmm. And the activity fees pay for the college campus groups.
Yeah, because most groups are prohibited from fundraising
right.
and prohibited from collecting dues.
So the fact that these public schools are forcing every single student to pay a public fee, and then we're seeing on these public campuses a lopsided support of ideology, what Fred Lucas is saying is this is the same thing.
Right.
So he's suggesting that Janus will be then force the agency or force these public schools to either stop collecting these fees or stop dictating an ideology by limiting free speech. Now, remember, this is the proper application is public school versus private school, right? So
yeah.
what we're talking about here, and we see in the news all the time, and it is something that FIRE deals with and has been dealing with for a long time, is this idea that these public college campuses It's undeniable the prejudice and bias on the campuses by the administration. Now, you read me something about how a national group of professors.
Yeah, so the many states have passed laws, apparently. Several states have passed laws, that say you can't have viewpoint discrimination and you can't have these free speech zones.
Mm-hmm.
And so apparently the American
Association. So that's Missouri, Arizona, Virginia, Utah, Colorado, Tennessee, North Carolina, Wisconsin.
Correct. Okay. And so apparently the American Association of University Professors opposes these laws. So they
support
free speech zones. They support discrimination based on viewpoint.
Yeah.
Is what they're saying. And it's interesting, again, now, bear in mind, these are university professors. So these are the people teaching, right, the college students. So here's their understanding of free speech. They say many of the most difficult issues surrounding free speech at present are about balancing unobstructed dialogue with the need to make all constituencies on campus feel included. So those are the professors. So no wonder you have these problems on campus, right? The professors and the educational institutions and the education itself is part of the source of the problem.
Right.
Because the idea of somebody feeling included, how they feel, that is not the basis of restricting free speech.
Right, but
it's the opposite.
But it also is contradictory, because you're saying, we don't care if you feel included on campus. We're going to shove you in a corner in a box for your speech, but we're going to let everybody else speak wherever they want.
Right. So that's the other aspect of it, hypocrisy or dishonesty.
Well, I want to talk to you also today about how this is not just simply limited to the college campuses, but also on our public school campuses, high school as well. Now, obviously, the standard of free speech is slightly different in K through 12 because the kids are minors, right? So once you're an adult, you can't be limited in your speech in that way. But as a minor in a high school, you can be limited. You know, you have obscenity limitations, you have obscene speech limitations, that sort of thing. But we're not talking about that aspect. We're talking about the aspect of, once again, a forced political ideology that is turning our K through 12 into indoctrination centers. And I want to speak specifically about something that happened in Carlsbad, New Mexico. So what we had was a Carlsbad high school student hosted a nationwide walkout as a counter approach to the Parkland teens. Okay, so his idea, his name is Will Riley, and he said, "Parkland students don't speak for me," and he organized this campus-wide rally for the Second Amendment, and it was called Stand for the Second, right? Now, in this particular high school, there was also the Parkland-esque kind of walkout, okay? So what we're having now in this Carlsbad, New Mexico high school is what we're talking about, this forced ideology where the principal of this high school, his I have his name here. I'll get it for you in just a second. Actually supported the Parkland-esque kind of campus-wide gun protest, but then went to extreme measures to chill and suppress the same kind of rally that was to be held by Will Riley and the pro-Second Amendment people. Now, the Firearms Policy Coalition is bringing an issue to the superintendent there in the Carlsbad Municipal Schools about how this principal, Adam Garcia Amador, actually tried to suppress. This principal actually threatened Will with criminal prosecution for inciting a riot if anything bad happened because of him holding this pro-gun rally.
Wow.
But never said anything like that for the pro-gun control rally. As a matter of fact, the Firearms Policy Coalition has put together a little chart about the disparate and inequitable treatment of the student walkouts by this Carlsbad High School. And what we see is the anti-gun rights rally, the principal sent an email to the teachers urging support, but the pro-Second Amendment rally, he sent an email forbidding the support of the students. He offered counseling and guidance to the students or the anti-gun rally, offered no support whatsoever for the pro-Second Amendment rally. He told teachers to meet with the student leaders of the anti-gun rights rally and assess their needs, and he threatened and attempted to intimidate Will Riley repeatedly based on the pro-Second Amendment rally. Now, for the anti-gun rally, the principal reassured the students that police presence was there for their protection and not to quell their expression, and there would be no mention any possibility of students being arrested or charged, and that participation must be inclusive of all students. But for the pro-Second Amendment rally, students were threatened with arrest for inciting a riot or loitering. The police presence used by the principal was to intimidate Will Riley. They actually had a meeting with Will with the police before the rally happened, explaining to him his criminal implications for this rally.
Man, I see a significant basis for a lawsuit here.
Yeah, so the school
this
board needs to.
This guy's a government agent.
Yes.
Acting in his capacity as principal.
And he told the police the emphasis would be keeping the students in check and not keeping them safe. When we come back after the break, I want you to know more about this. You need to know more about this.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the last segment of the first hour of the Chris Ann Hall Show. Remember, if you are on a terrestrial station that is only carrying our first hour, you must go to all those other places, chrisannhall.com, iTunes, Google Music Play, Spotify, FM.com, and listen to the second half of our show, because this is where we're going to get into Cohen and Manafort and the Mueller investigation and all the constitutional problems this investigation is going to bring forward. But we're now talking about this indoctrination of our future of America by our public school systems. And what's happening in Carlsbad is happening all over America. And we need to know this. This principal at Carlsbad, at the Carlsbad High School, is engaging not in education, but indoctrination. This is Principal Adam Amador Garcia, or Adam Garcia Amador. I don't remember which way it goes. Adam Amador. And he is engaging in this very thing that FIRE talks about on the college campuses, but now in our public K through 12 schools.
And it's the principle of viewpoint discrimination.
Yes.
I mean, this, to me, this is clear cut First Amendment violation.
Absolutely. And, you know, the
notwithstanding, you know, the principal's right to say, you know, you can't skip class, right? But in which he could have said to either group, and said nothing else. The problem then, he did all these things and made all these statements, and you have the comparison of how he reacted to one group to where he reacted to the other group. So this is, to me, this is a slam dunk for some attorney.
Yeah, absolutely. Gregory Rodriguez is the superintendent for the Carlsbad Municipal Schools, and he has been contacted by the Firearm Policy Coalition outlining this, and there needs to be action about this. And this is the list that I gave you is just simply the tip of the iceberg. This principal, Adam Garcia Amador of the Carlsbad High School, has absolutely gone out of his way to engage in viewpoint discrimination.
And intimidation. Tried to intimidate not only the students, but also the teachers, apparently,
right,
who were forbidden to discuss it. While they were encouraged to discuss in David Hogg's protest, they were forbidden to discuss it in this case with the implication that they may be fired if they did.
Yeah. So what we have is we had not only that, the principal of Carlsbad High School supported this pro-anti-gun rally, which happened at 10 a.m. for 17 minutes on a Wednesday. He allowed the pro-Second Amendment rally to happen for 15 minutes, the last 15 minutes of the day, and then sent a memo to teachers that said, if your students walk out and they miss anything in class, you can withhold the credit for that. You can even give them a failure if there's a test. Wow. For this walking out.
This guy's out of control.
And this is what we call, the chilling effect.
Yeah.
In First Amendment cases, there is this principle called the chilling effect, where a government actor, at this point, this government actor's name is Principal Adam Garcia Amador at Carlsbad High School, right, who has now become the government actor engaging in the chilling effect. That means that the fire of liberty is being chilled by threats, intimidation, and opposition.
What county is this?
Carlsbad. I don't know what county that is. We should probably I'll let you look that up while we're doing this. But I think that this is absolutely ridiculous. You know, we got this information from our friend Scott London, who was the former sheriff of Eddy County.
That's the county.
Eddy County, right. And so he was the sheriff there. And apparently the sheriff that is now there is still a constitutionally minded sheriff. And
he's not okay with this.
I would say to him that he has a responsibility to tell the Carlsbad
principal, arresting anybody.
I'm not arresting anybody. And as a matter of fact, I'm there to offer the same protection to the pro-Second Amendment students as I would be protecting the gun control students. Right. So this is another reason why the constitutional sheriff is so important.
Yep.
If you don't know about the constitutional sheriff, you need to read my book, Sovereign Duty. You can get that at chrisannhall.com, or you can go to Constitutional Sheriff's Peace Officers Association,
CSPOA.org,
and learn about the duties and the principles of the constitutional sheriff.
Do it now.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Chris Ann Hall Double Dose of Liberty, Double Dose of Constitution. ChrisAnnHall.com, ChrisAnnHall.com. You can get your daily dose of news the way it's supposed to be told at our Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal, Monday through Thursday. And you can get a daily dose of education as well through Liberty First University. You know, there's something that you touched on in the first hour that I want to just, in the second hour, re-emphasize. Education is nothing without activation.
Yep.
And activation is a way that you can help us. Help us by not just simply sharing these shows, sharing the articles at chrisannhall.com, inspiring people to actually get information from them.
Just remember, knowledge is not power unless it's put into action.
Unless it's put into action. And you can help us as well by sponsoring this show. Look, we do what we do because we love liberty, but we live in a liberty, we live in an economy-driven society. We've got to have money to do these things. And one way you can do that is to go to chrisannhall.com. You can donate. And monthly, if everybody listening to this show just simply donated $5 a month, so many things that we could keep doing here at chrisannhall.com, the radio show. We are trying to expand what we do. I have spent so much time on radio and television in these last couple weeks trying to bring people to the Chris Ann Hall, the constitutional message, but all of that takes money, so we need your support. You can sign up to get our emails so that this show and the Daily Journal comes to your mailbox every single day. You don't even have to look for it. I know, by show of hand, everybody show me, how many of you are sick and tired of the way Facebook and Twitter keeps these messages from you? And I'm looking, yeah, I see you. And this is how we combat that. If you get it to your email box, you can't be censored by Facebook. You can't be censored by Twitter. You can't be censored because it's coming to you. The other way, you must visit our sponsors. We have a great sponsor, don't we? In Search of Liberty.com. In Search of Liberty.com.
Yeah, right now they're having a sale for, I think it's $12.99, $13, free shipping. You get this DVD. You should go do that. I mean, that's an easy way. $13, just $13. You can support the Chris Ann Hall Show.
Yeah.
I mean, piece of cake. Anybody should be able to do that.
And the Search of Liberty DVD, the Search of Liberty movie, will help you break the ice with those who think that the Constitution doesn't matter.
Man, I think it would be great to give to teachers, to give to just different groups, like good grief, Boy Scouts, you know, Boys Club, I mean, different things like that. Mm-hmm. There's nothing political about it. I mean, it's about the principles that make America an exceptional nation.
And not only that, recognizing why those principles matter, even if you feel like you're not a particularly political person.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would buy one, give it to teachers. I mean, I'd buy a whole pack.
Put them in the library.
Put them in the library, give it to teachers, you know, drop it off these places. Like, I mean, daycare. You got daycares that, hey, let's pop this in, kids watch a movie, whatever.
Combat the indoctrination.
Man, I think it'd be awesome. $13, how can you go wrong with that? That's easy.
Inoculate against the indoctrination at
an
early age.
Knowledge is not power unless you put it into action.
Unless you put it into action. That's in searchofliberty.com. Are you ready? I was waiting for that.
Yeah, this is the obligatory deal with the Trump circus that's going on. I mean, this everywhere, all over the place. But the problem is,
We're not talking about the right things.
Yep, so...
We're not talking about the right things.
I am blown away. I saw a headline. This Florida judge has to retire for calling a black defense attorney a gorilla.
What?
Yeah. So I'm not sure.
I would like to know what the context of that was.
It's amazing. Like this, how long he was almost going to retire. He was headed to retirement in January. So how you can be a judge that long and be that stupid at the end of your career?
Maybe he just got short-timer syndrome and he let his tongue flap away because he was feeling that liberty too early.
Yeah,
right?
We used to have a preacher that said, you can, if you're not careful, you can trip crossing the finish line.
Right.
You know,
right.
To be in it that long and to be in this current context and to say something so stupid is just, wow, shocking, amazing.
So I want to first get into this about Michael Cohen's plea deal and what that means for Trump, okay? Yep. Because right now what we have are people running around. Now, let me just be more specific. We're having Democrat congressmen running around calling Donald Trump a named unindicted co-conspirator. Okay, so number one, that is a highly inflammatory, if not simply libelous, slanderous statement. because it is completely and totally false, and it is alleging that there is a criminal implication against Donald Trump when none exists.
Correct.
So we actually have congressmen, House and Senate members, who are running around engaging in illegal activity by making these statements. So number one, just for your truthful inoculation to this indoctrination, number one, this is not a defense of Michael Cohen.
Right.
This is not a defense of Manafort. This is not a defense of Trump for anything he may or may not have done. These are the facts as they compel us to teach in order to secure the rule of law and to secure the principles of the Constitution.
So it's defense of the rule of law.
Defense of the rule of law.
And so you say that because he's not named.
He is not named.
Right? His name is not in this plea deal or this confession or whatever.
He is not a named, unindicted co-conspirator.
So if you're an unindicted co-conspirator, one, you have to be named.
Yes.
Which, as I was reading, the Supreme Court has consistently sort of chastised that idea of if they're a co-conspirator, then charge them.
Right.
Otherwise, don't just name somebody that you're not going to charge, because then due process is not initiated,
right,
and they have no platform to defend themselves.
Right. So what you're doing is you're injecting them into the courtroom of political opinion, which is
right,
which is wrong, which is slander.
Yes.
Okay. And written is libel. Right. So then what that does,
they're inferring. Now,
yeah,
they're probably correctly inferring that Cohen was talking about Trump, but we're talking about a legal designation.
Right. So what the Supreme Court has said creates a legal standard that says if you're not going to actually indict a co-conspirator, then you cannot name that co-conspirator, which means since Trump is not named in the indictment,
yeah,
it is likely legally by standard that he will not be indicted.
Yeah.
Now, when he leaves the office,
yeah,
perhaps.
Could it mean they're
right?
Could it mean they're waiting on things? So so could this change in the sense of, because now they're supposed to be talking to the National Enquirer guy, and so get more information. So could this change when they feel like they have enough evidence? Now they will name him in a specific indictment, and you know, conversely, would this indicate that maybe they don't feel they have enough evidence at this point to name him and indict him?
I would say yes to both of those things. The clear thing that we need to understand here is that he is not named. And because he is not named, then we can suppose that they don't have the evidence that they need to name him. Because remember, naming him as an unindicted co-conspirator would imply that there will be an indictment coming and that there is actual legal proof that he is a co-conspirator.
Yeah.
And when that happens, then due process has to kick in. Could it be that they would name him at a later time? Yes, it could mean that, but history does tell us otherwise, right?
Yeah, so the another sort of idea is they think that a sitting president should not or cannot be indicted until he's no longer president. So that could be an explanation as well.
Yeah, that could be an explanation, but there is no constitutional basis for that understanding. There is absolutely nothing in the Constitution that prohibits the President of the United States from being indicted in a criminal case. None at all.
This just has been picked up as a tradition, a philosophy, you know, but it's not necessarily, the Constitution doesn't say anything about the president not being able to be indicted.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, to claim that the president cannot be indicted for alleged criminal activity, cannot be tried by due process for an alleged criminal activity, is contrary to the intent of the founders to begin with, because they had much discussion on the creation of the office of the president, and the chiefest of concern in creating an office of the president with one head of the executive office was that this one person would evolve and morph into a king over the years by bringing in power and creating exemptions to control and checks and balances. So the idea that the president can't be indicted for a crime would establish that the president himself is above the law while he is president.
Like a king.
Like a king. I mean, there's nothing more kingly than placing the president of the United States
above
the law and above reproach.
So let me, I want to track, make sure I'm tracking to get on this. All right. So number one, he's not named.
Not named.
Therefore, he is not an unindicted. Unindicted.
He is not a named unindicted co-conspirator.
Nor would he be unindicted co-conspirator in the least, because that's a legal classification, right?
Right. Because he's not. I mean, you can assume who is the co-conspirator, sir.
But legally
he's not. Right. Legally speaking.
Next, this could indicate they don't have enough evidence to indict him.
Right.
One, or it could indicate they don't want to indict him because he's a sitting president.
Right.
Right? Next, that may mean he could be indicted after he's president.
Yes.
But that's not likely looking at history.
That's right. That's right. Because
lastly, there is no constitutional reason that a president can't be indicted while president.
Right. And I believe that what we're looking at here, and the proof that he's not indicted, is either that they don't have enough evidence or they ever have any intention of indicting him anyway, because the better trial comes through public opinion.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. This is Chris Ann Hall here. I am with my husband and co-host J.C. Hall, and we are talking about all things Cohen, Manafort, Mueller, and Trump. And as I mentioned, as we were coming out of the break, what we need to understand here, I think, the fact that we are not, that they are not naming Trump, the fact that they are not indicting Trump, either means they don't have the evidence to do it, but it doesn't really matter, because I think what we're seeing now is the fact that they don't have the evidence, but they don't feel like they need the evidence because they want the trial to take place in public opinion. They don't want an actual trial because they can't prove the accusations that they're making.
Yeah, because a trial could mean they don't get what they're after, then it's over and done with, and we got to move on, and he won.
Right.
Yeah, so I could definitely see that. They would like to drag – I think they would like to drag this out as far as they can, never really do anything official, at least until after the midterms. If they were to win Congress or whatever, then I think it would change. But I want to ask you about the specific charges, the specific issues in this thing. Isn't there a problem with the charges themselves? It seems like there's a lot of discussion that seems to indicate a catch-22, an ambiguity here,
right,
about the contribution, not contribution, who, what, how much, what was authorized, and all that.
Well, let me before we move on to that, because that's a very important point. Lisa Kern Griffin is a law professor at Duke University, and I think that she a statement that she made is what we really need to understand here. She said he, meaning Trump, is all but an unindicted co-conspirator.
Yep.
So even this law professor from Duke University is saying, look, he is not an unindicted co-conspirator.
Yeah, but
he may be lots of things,
yeah,
but he's
but
not
she's
that.
Saying you could infer that. She's meaning you can infer that that's who they were talking about.
But he's not.
From a legal perspective, he is not.
And even if he... And I think, let me put it this way.
Because it's part of due process.
It
can't just be. See, mm-hmm. And that's the problem that you said with the congressman, because they don't respect due process. So they're running around saying, oh, he's undocumented co-conspirator, when that's false and could be even worse, you know, something illegal that they're doing.
Yeah, I think that.
By saying this, by uttering this.
I think if Trump wanted to, he could bring legal action against them.
Yeah.
for these statements because they're meant to disparage his reputation, accusing him of a crime that he's not been legally charged with false statements. Now, where were we? Cohen is charged with campaign contribution.
Right, so it's campaign finance laws what the problem is here. So,
and it has to do with the payment of Stormy Daniels and another woman for their silence.
Yeah, so as I've understood it, you know, there's a limit, like $5,200 or something, personal limit,
mm-hmm.
right, that you can't give, as an individual, you can't give over this. But on the other hand, and they're calling this campaign contributions, which I don't understand that.
Well, we'll get into that.
But
mm-hmm.
but on Trump's side, he can contribute whatever he wants to his campaign. There's no limit on what he can contribute.
What he can personally do out of his own budget. So,
doesn't that kind of unravel some of these allegations? I'm not clear on this. This is strange to me. Seems contradictory.
Well, let's look at it, because this could be giving us a good indication as to why Trump is not a named unindicted co-conspirator. Because
right.
in order to prove campaign finance fraud, you first have to prove that the money went for campaign expenses.
Okay.
Okay, so what we have is a payment to these two women, what they call hush money. You know, we're not going to talk about this personal transaction
that took place
with us.
But these attorneys are characterizing it as campaign contributions.
Right, so they would
that's
have to.
That's what I understand.
Right, okay, so that's what I'm trying to say. They would have to prove that this money going to these women was based on a campaign activity. And so what they'd have to actually allege, or what they'd have to prove then, I believe, is that these women had relations with Donald Trump as a matter of campaign activity. Right? And so here's the bottom line.
But if here's the thing, if Cohen gave the money, right, and they're saying
mm-hmm.
that's illegal because it's over the limit,
mm-hmm.
well, that doesn't make Trump guilty of anything. That makes Cohen guilty. And
right.
if they say Trump is the one that gave it, well, Trump doesn't have a limitation on what he can give, so therefore he's not guilty
of that.
Okay,
but you're missing step number one. Step number one is actually proving that all of this
was
campaign
related.
No, I understand.
I'm saying assuming that. If you're looking just at the amount, If they're going by that, at least on that one issue, then that doesn't make Trump guilty. So it seems
right.
like they're in a catch-22 with that.
So step number one is proving that it's campaign-related. Step number two is proving who actually made the payment.
Right.
So if by Cohen alleging Trump actually made the payment makes it
a legal.
Non-crime.
Right.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KrisAnneHall.com. Remember, share this show, but don't just share. Inspire and activate your friends to become involved, to not just you get the education, but to use the education. Give them the challenge. Listen for 4 days. Or you can send them to chrisannhall.com and tell them, hey, pick 5 episodes, any 5 episodes where the titles mean something to you, and listen. And if you can listen to 5 episodes and not be hooked, then I'll leave you alone. And I think that's a very, very safe bet to make.
I won't leave you alone. I'm coming to your house with a radio.
All right. So we're talking about Cohen. We're talking about the plea deal. We're talking about the status of Trump as an unindicted co-conspirator. We've already determined that he is not a named unindicted co-conspirator, that he cannot be claimed as being an unindicted co-conspirator because he's not been named.
Or indicted.
And we can't talk about the now we have to understand that the alleged illegal activity conspiring was campaign finance crimes. So we have to, number one, prove that the Stormy Daniels and the other lady were campaign related. Then we have to prove that the money came from Cohen, directed by Trump. Say Trump says, you pay this out of our campaign funds. And then if it didn't come from campaign funds, if it didn't come from Cohen, but as Cohen alleges in his statement came from Trump himself, If it's personal funds from Trump, if they prove it to be campaign related, then there is no crime at all.
Okay. Now, the other thing, let's say it's campaign funds.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And he said, pay this and whatever. The only thing that would, the only illegal thing there would be not reporting it.
Right,
because you require it. So there are like four main things in the campaign's finance laws. One of them is reporting, incoming and outgoing funds.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like the most he has violated, looking at what they allege, is just not reporting outgoing funds if these are in fact contribution or campaign contribution funds.
Right. Exactly.
Which is kind of a minor thing, legally speaking, you know, as far as, because, Barack Obama went through this in his campaign. It
yeah, so,
like, no
Barack,
big deal.
Right, Obama campaign was fined big for hiding donors and keeping illegal donations.
Right.
So, where is the special investigation, the special counsel back in 2000, when was it? Back in 2008 or 2003, I don't remember. It was 2008, where campaign has been hit, the Barack Obama campaign was fined $375,000 by the FEC for violating federal disclosure laws.
Yeah, so I don't know. That's what I see. So it seems like this non-reporting. So you're guilty of non-reporting. Same as Barack Obama.
Same as Barack Obama
in 2008.
So then
you should have similar punishments, right?
Right.
Of which was a fine in his case.
So was Barack Obama impeached over that?
So the other thing is this conspiracy to illegally influence election. That seems to me a really hard thing to prove from a legal perspective. I don't know how they, I mean, unless all of a sudden you have the guy from National Enquirer, Michael Cohen, saying all this, and then you have emails and documents, you know, supporting this specifically and directly.
Well, one would have to assume that if they had all of that, he would be a named co-conspirator.
That's what I was saying. So
now, let us not...
It looks pretty shaky to me so far.
Now, let us not forget that the entire stated purpose for calling for a special counsel was
Russian
collusion.
Yeah.
Now, nobody is alleging that Stormy Daniels is Russian. Okay. Nobody's alleging that this other woman is or
Russian.
I'm
not sure what Mother Jones says. I don't read that, but.
Oh, okay.
They may say something like that. That would be something crazy that Mother Jones would say.
So what we have now are.
Or Vox.
Or Vox, yeah. I don't even think Vox is going there. What we have now is a situation that is going to affect our future generations because we are allowing federal expanded power beyond the limitation of the Constitution.
Yeah, and that's the big discussion that's not taking place.
And this is what's not taking place. And what I'm talking about is the restrictions of the Fourth Amendment on the power of the federal government to issue warrants. As a reminder to those of you who are listening, the Fourth Amendment reads, the right of the people, and it is not a respecter of persons,
yep.
It is all people, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. No warrant shall issue, but based upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, particularly describing the persons to be searched. I'm messing that up. Particularly describing the places to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
Right.
Now,
by the way, that's evidence. The little hang up right there, the radio audience can't see this, but you were not reading that.
Yeah, I was not reading
it
was that.
Directly from memory.
Directly from memory, so that's fine.
Which I could not do in 1,000 years.
But the words.
I'd be pulling out my pocket constitution right at that point. So good job.
But the whole thing, but what it says in the manner in which it says it is so very important. We are to be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures. And the Fourth Amendment tells us exactly what the only kind of reasonable search and seizure would be. And that would be one that contains a warrant based on probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Now, that second element is probable cause.
So, in other words, you can't, in light of probable cause, a judge can't issue a warrant that is basically okay, here you go. Here's permission to search. Go see what you can find.
Right.
And that's what is going on in this special counsel investigation.
Right. And specifically,
what Trump means when he characterizes it as a fishing expedition.
That's right. And that's actually, we use that in the legal world, fishing expedition, to describe a case just like this, because, well, they had probable cause that Manafort was lying to the IRS, and they had probable cause that Cohen had paid off these people. The problem is that probable cause cannot be related to some random investigation. If you're getting a warrant for an investigation, the probable cause has to be related to the terms of the investigation. The government, the FBI, cannot come and allege to a judge, we think this guy is harboring terrorists. Yeah. But guess what? He borrowed his neighbor's lawnmower. And since he borrowed his neighbor's lawnmower, we want a warrant to investigate whether his neighbor is paying his taxes. That is not probable cause related to the investigation.
Yeah. And you're talking this not necessarily about Cohen. That was the Southern District of New York federal prosecutors, which is separate from this thing. But then now they're trying to make a connection, attachment, where
right.
that now you have to cooperate. So it seems to be evident that the whole purpose of these sort of fishing expedition style investigation is to get stuff so that you can strong arm people to implicate Donald Trump in something, anything, whatever we can find in order to take him down.
And in the legal field, if a challenge comes to the warrant, and it can be shown that the warrant was based on this fishing expedition, the evidence obtained by that warrant is called the fruit of the poisonous tree and is dismissed from being subject to prosecution. So you actually spoil the entire case, the entire criminal case, by engaging in this carte blanche, unlimited investigatory power.
So do you see this? Let me ask this, because this is what I have been sort of thinking. Do you see this whole notion of a special counsel, quote unquote special counsel, as really a threat to the Fourth Amendment, to due process in general? Because it seems like there is an acceptance when they say special counsel,
special rules.
It seems like there's just this acceptance that because we had another radio show host say, well, Congress has given this guy pretty much carte blanche to do whatever. And that implies that Congress has the power mm-hmm. in itself to just set aside the Fourth Amendment and due process and to sort of, you know, knight somebody
right.
With these powers to do whatever they want. And that seems frightening to me. And it always seems to be connected, or that's something that always seems to be connected to these special counsel thing. I mean, look back at Ken Starr. You saw some similar things, really wide-ranging, all over the place sort of investigation where this guy was given powers to do whatever because he's special counsel. So this whole notion of special counsel seems very questionable to me.
It is extremely questionable, and it is even more questionable when you read the directions of the special counsel. When you go and read the directions of the special counsel, what you find is that the directions to the special counsel are really a carte blanche directions. Anything that you can find, we give you the authority to investigate.
Yeah, and bear in mind, Robert Mueller is not even part of the federal government.
Right.
Right. They went out and got a private citizen, your former FBI, former this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, you don't even work for the Justice Department.
Right.
I mean, they go out. I mean, they literally, you know, we grant you knighthood to now pursue whatever. I mean,
the document
really
it says the appointment of special counsel to investigate Russian interference with the 2016 presidential election and related matters. It's right there in the title of the document coming from Jeff Sessions' office. Right.
Yeah.
This is the purpose. Tell me how IRS lying to the IRS is consistent or related to Russian interference with the 2016 election. A lying to the IRS that happened 10 years before the election.
I want to understand what is the support? How is it that the Attorney General's office can essentially deputize a private citizen and give them powers?
Quasi-governmental powers
that go beyond the Constitution itself.
I would say beyond governmental powers, because right here in subsection B, subsection 2, it says that this special counsel has the authority to investigate, quote, any matters that arise or may arise directly from the investigation.
See, this is a thing I think we're missing because we focused on either for Trump or against Trump. There's a bigger picture here.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Chris Ann Hall Show, and we're talking about the real problems with this Mueller investigation, with the Manafort trial, with the Cohen plea deal, and it has to do with the implications that the Fourth Amendment does not buy in time the federal government. And here's the thing that we're seeing. Well, you know, a conviction's a conviction. I mean, obviously, Manafort's guilty, so he went to trial, so a conviction's a conviction. Cohen's guilty. We got a plea deal, so what difference does it make?
So we're okay with deputizing a person with extra constitutional powers to do whatever, with no restraint, no limitations. I mean, that's what they're saying.
Right. Well, here's the problem.
That's frightening to me.
If the focus is just about getting the bad guy, if the focus is just about winning the conviction, then I just want to proffer this question to everybody listening. Why do we even have the Fourth Amendment? What is the purpose of the Fourth Amendment if the only thing we should be concerned about is getting the bad guy? Because that's what you're saying. If you believe that a conviction proves that the conviction at the end justifies the means by which it was achieved, then why do we have the Fourth Amendment? Why do we have the Fifth Amendment? Why do we have the Sixth Amendment? Why do we have the Eighth Amendment, right? Cruel and unusual punishment. Let me ask you something, JC. If I am convicted of lying to the IRS and my punishment is 3.5 centuries of prison time, how in any reasonable person's mind is that not cruel and unusual punishment? Yeah. Lying to the IRS will get you 3.5 centuries of prison, but murdering someone... 25 maybe? Seriously. How is that not cruel and unusual? What, are you trying to protect Manafort? He broke the law. You know what? I am not trying to protect Manafort. I'm trying to protect you.
Yeah.
Because remember... Every time we have an article on the Chris Ann Hall website written by our friend and economics expert Robin Kerner, who proves to you in that article that every time you file a tax return, you commit perjury.
Yeah. Well, you have in that book, what is it? I don't know, 4 felonies a day or whatever it is, where that pretty much anybody walking around, if they wanted to, you'd be a criminal. I mean, they could prosecute you for something. Anyone. That can happen to anyone. I think that's what we miss in these conversations. This is not about Manafort and any wrongdoing that these guys done. It's about the process and how it applies to other people, right?
Right.
Here's the thing. So you do the, what's that, the website, Law and Crime.
Right.
And you're appearing on that, which is a great, I think, great website, a great, great medium. There and they show, you can see court cases.
You get exposed to real judicial, real due process.
So here's the thing. Here's where I think we go wrong. So the average person, you watch a court case, like OJ, or shows like this, court TV, what have you. And you're focused on the facts, guilty, not guilty, what happened, this and that. I think that's where we go off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
To be liberty-minded, you're not focused on, who did it, or not. It's a matter of the process. You watch the process. How are they using the tools, and are they using them appropriately? Because that's what has relation to you. Whether that guy's guilty or not guilty has nothing to do with me. But what does have something to do with me, what will affect my children and grandchildren and our future generations, is how these tools are being used. Is the Bill of Rights being respected? Are the restraints being respected? Or are we expanding powers? Are we granting arbitrary power and saying they can do whatever they want to do?
As long as they get what we perceive to be the bad guy.
Yeah, the ends justifies the means.
And here's
that's when
the
you
thing.
Put that's when you put innocent people in danger. You can go after the bad guy in such a way that endangers innocent people in the future.
That is exactly the point that I was about to make. And this is what our founders fought for. This is exactly what they were seeing with James Otis Jr. Yep. This is the type of prosecution that put people in the prison ships, in which more people died in prison ships than they did in combat during our revolution.
But isn't this the trap? It's so politicized. We don't even notice the process. We don't know what's going on. We're just looking at get Obama, get Trump, get Hillary. Team versus team.
Yeah, and this is why we must compel and take back this narrative. This is why we must compel this conversation, this Fourth Amendment constitutional conversation. We need the big people to be talking about this, and that's how it gets done. You share, you excite, and you activate. God bless you guys. See you on Monday.
Let me know.